This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, sitting in for Mike Collins. Last night, Donald Trump won Indiana's presidential primary convincingly, and his closest rival, Senator Ted Cruz, suspended his presidential campaign. Last night, the party's chair, Reince Priebus, tweeted that Trump was the presumptive nominee. But before Indiana even totaled its votes, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina tweeted, "If we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed, and we will deserve it." So what is the state of the Republican Party heading into the summer and this fall's general campaign? With us today in studio is Dr. Susan Roberts, an associate professor of political science at Davidson College and a frequent analyst on this show and many other Charlotte media outlets. She teaches courses on the presidency as well as political parties. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
And Tom Bullock from WFA News, who covers politics and money in government. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone is Carter Wren, a Republican strategist here in North Carolina who managed Ronald Reagan's primary campaign in 1976 and several of Jesse Helms' U.S. Senate campaigns, ultimately directing 9 successful campaigns in the state. He writes a blog with Democrat Gary Pierce at talkaboutpolitics.com. Good morning, Carter.
Good morning.
If you want to share your thoughts or questions about the state of the grand old party, either at the national or the state level, send us an email to charlottetalks@wfae.org, send us a tweet at Charlotte Talks, or find us on Facebook. So let me just start with everybody. Carter, I'll start with you. What do you see as the state of the Republican Party nationally?
Well, I think both parties are in a fair amount of mess these days nationally. You know, the country's pretty polarized. You've got two pretty level, even blocks of voters in the base of the Republicans and the Democrats, and then you've got the swing voters who don't really like either party or any of the candidates for president right now. So it's a typical political mess.
All right, Susan?
Well, I think I agree that it's a mess. I think it's Trump says that he delivered so many Republicans to the primaries, and I think many people would say he delivered Trumpites. There was, during the interviews with some foreign observers, one young woman said, "I'm surprised he has so many fans." And I think I would characterize it as fans rather than voters, and not to take anything away from the Republicans. But I think the celebrity factor with Trump, I think the Republicans are in a kind of state of denial today. And then they're going to figure out what the game plan will be. And I think it's going to be lukewarm support at best.
Okay. Tom, you've covered politics both nationally and here in North Carolina. How do you see the state of the party?
I don't know if the Republican Party knows what the state of the party is, because I'm not so sure that there is a state of one unified party. We've been reporting for a long time about the civil war that's been going on. And realistically, with the win last night in Indiana, and it was a convincing win, Trump managed to knock out his only serious rival for the Republican nod. But in doing so, now he's caused the party to basically stop and say, what are we? What is our identity? I mean, for the longest time, as long as I can remember, the Republican Party has largely found its orthodoxy supporting big business, supporting, you know, trade agreements, basically supporting things that Donald Trump wants to and has campaigned on tearing down. So I think right now, I agree, Carter's right, it's a mess, but this is a mess unlike we've seen in my lifetime.
Carter, the Republican orthodoxy that Tom talked about had some basic principles. What is Trump doing in terms of now basically being the nominee moving forward, and it's now Trump's Republican Party? What does that stand for? What are some of the basic ideas that you see Trump promoting within the Republican Party?
Well, the basic principles in the Republican Party, I think, revolve around less government, traditional values, and a strong national defense. And I think if you boil it down, those are sort of the three fundamental things most Republican voters care about. And I think think Trump is pretty much in tune with that on less government and probably on a strong defense. On the values piece, maybe he's a little different from the basic Republican voter, but it remains to be seen how much. And the trade deals and that sort of thing, Republicans have always been split on those. There have always been a group that opposed them and a group that supported them. Trump seems to be more on the side of the people that oppose them. But I don't think that's an issue that's going to be a big problem, say, with Republican voters. There's some Republicans in Washington that are pretty serious about trade deals. That's a pretty small group of people.
Okay. We've got our first comment from Twitter. Jonathan wrote in, "I'm socially liberal but fiscally conservative. Where is my candidate? Current GOP more concerned about the bedroom and bathroom than functional government. Voted GOP now no longer." Susan, is this what we're seeing in terms of you talked about the Trumpite, the potential supporter. Where's the voter base going to be come this fall, do you think?
Well, I think many people thought that the Republicans were going to be defined, as you talk about HB2, by the evangelicals. Trump has that vote. I think you look at Trump, and besides the economic base or the things he diverts from the Republican Party, people have described him as authoritarian in terms of nativism. That has never defined the Republican Party, I don't think, before, to be that blatantly anti-immigrant, ban Muslims, also to build a wall. These are things that I think are values for the Republican Party, they're going to have to face. You find them in Trump. And I think the Republicans in the last time around, what we call the autopsy in 2012, it was messaging, it was technology, but it was let's be inclusive, which is absolutely the opposite of where Trump wants to take the party. And I think this is a challenge to the party, unlike the Tea Party, unlike the Freedom Caucus. It gets to these social issues that I think our caller is concerned about.
Well, and it's interesting to me, too, because in preparing for the show, I went back and read the autopsy.
Yeah,
the autopsy itself is fascinating. Because there's one section there where it basically lays out the demographics of a modern America. And you need to win the demographics, obviously, in order to win the votes to win the White House. And in that, they actually have a series of bullet points where they see that the party must reach out. And in those groups, you see specifically singled out Hispanics, women, minorities. Now, you can argue whether or not the minority piece is playing into Trump's, you know, campaign. But if you want to look at two groups where he has directly lashed out and done exactly what the Republicans' own autopsy said that they should do, it's with women and it's with Hispanics. And those two voting blocks, you know, specifically women are key. They're the single largest voting block in the country, and they don't necessarily vote as a unified bloc.
All right. What I want to do is go back in 2012. What we're talking about is this autopsy report that the National Party put together entitled The Growth and Opportunity Project. And they wrote in this report that there is, quote, a growing unrest within the community of Republican women frustrated by the party's negative image among women. But now what we're seeing in the polls, and Carter, I would like for you to start us off on this conversation, 75% of women have an unfavorable view of Donald Trump. If the electorate is 53% women, where does the party go if their front runner is so disliked?
Well, I got two kind of comments on that. First, that autopsy report was written by a bunch of Washington politicians. And I'm not sure that their conclusions, which are that we need to be more like the Democrats to get Hispanic votes, are a solution at all. Second, even election here, where both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have unusually high negatives. Talked to somebody the other day that said, you know, it's just Republicans' luck. We get a candidate in Hillary with a 60% negative, and it turns out our candidate has a 65 negative. That's going to be a very volatile election. people, it looks like, are going to be coming down to choosing which of the two candidates do I dislike least. And we've seen that in North Carolina to some extent in the 2014 race and the 2012 race. And, you know, right now, Trump has a high negative among women, so does Hillary. The question is, at the end of the day, is one of those going to build support with women, or are they simply going to decide which they dislike the least?
Okay. Susan?
Well, I think in reading the autopsy, one little pithy quote came across, and when I thought about it, I didn't even think about women. I think, you know, to be flippant, they quote Dick Armey, who said, "You can't call someone ugly and expect them to go to the prom with you." And I think that really applies somewhat to Hispanics and to women. The Democrats may not be able to keep up the rhetoric of a war on women. Women are not a monolithic vote. But I think when you look at something they may think as misogynist, sexism, that unites a lot of women regardless of partisan leanings.
Okay. Tom?
Well, I just want to put some numbers to exactly what Carter was just saying. This morning, CNN released a joint poll they did with ORC that shows Hillary Clinton with a 13-point lead nationally. That, to me, is not the headline of it, though. And to Carter's point, among Clinton supporters, 51% of the poll respondents said that they supported Hillary Clinton because they were opposing Donald Trump. 57% of Trump supporters said they went to him because they don't want a they don't want Hillary Clinton in the White House. So what we have is this topsy-turvy, you know, political year where literally it seems at this moment people are more willing to vote against someone than for someone, which is a difficult place to campaign in because really it just basically means, well, how do I get that slight edge? How do I lure more voters? And it may just be that you wait for your opponent, in this case, to do something that gets more voters to your side.
Carter, you've been a strategist. You've run campaigns. Is that what you're seeing this fall, that basically we're going to delve to the deepest reaches of this campaign in terms of negativism?
Well, I think negative perceptions are probably biggest factor in the campaign right now. Now, it can play out just that way. It can come down to who do I dislike least. But there's also time for perceptions to change. And I expect both Clinton and Trump are going to try to increase their likability and favorability. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. If they can't, then it comes down to a Hobson's choice election. And that's a pretty volatile kind of election, but we've been seeing a lot of those lately. We hadn't had many elections where there was a white knight that everybody generally agreed they liked.
How are voters going to respond to this, Susan?
Well, I think that voters are going to look at this, and it's not just job approval. It's unfavorables, and it's questions of temperament and trust, and that's been drawn into the system. I think, as Carter points out, it's, you know, we've had negative ads for a long time, but we've seen a lot of this negativity, not on television, not from the super PACs, but in the debates, and that's going to be every American can see those.
That's Susan Roberts from Davidson College. She's joined by Carter Wren, a Republican strategist in Raleigh, and Tom Bullock from WFA News. We're talking about the state of the Republican Party, both nationally and locally. We'll have more of the conversation right after this break. This is Charlotte Talks.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Duke Energy, dedicated to investing in energy solutions, including renewables, natural gas, and nuclear, designed to deliver power while reducing emissions. More at duke-energy.com/power. Tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, Founding Mothers, Ladies of Liberty, and now Capital Dames. In addition to political commentary, Cokie Roberts has spent years writing about the women who helped shape America. Her latest book covers the women of the Civil War and how their works influenced the actions of the men in our history books. Cokie Roberts will be in Charlotte, and she'll join us for a special conversation about Capital Dames. And of course, we'll get Cokie's take on this eventful and extraordinary election year. Join us for a special Charlotte Talks with Cokie Roberts tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the results of Tuesday's Indiana primaries. Then the Justice Department says some states wrongly place thousands of people with mental and physical health problems in nursing homes. A look at federal efforts to secure civil rights for those with disabilities.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Michael Bitzer of Catawba College, sitting in for Mike Collins, and we're talking about the state of the Republican Party, both nationally and here in North Carolina, with Carter Wren, longtime Republican strategist, Tom Bullock of WFA News, and Dr. Susan Roberts of Davidson College. Are you a Republican who will support Donald Trump, or are you a Republican who can't think of even voting for Donald Trump, and what will you do this fall? Join our conversation via email, charlottetalks@wfae.org, by Twitter, @charlottetalks, and on Facebook, search for WFAE. Dennis emailed in a question. My take on the Trump rise is that it is a reaction to the election of President Obama, similar to the rise of the Dixiecrats Party in reaction to the Democratic Party embracing civil rights. Do you see any of that similarity? Susan, I'll start with you as somebody who studies parties.
Well, I think the parties have been running away from the issue that might be the most akin to civil rights, and that is the voting rights restriction in all the states. And I think that's one of the things, if you look at that and a number of issues that are taking place at the state legislatures, then you might have a reaction to civil rights or things that are broadly writ as civil rights, and that is access to abortion, same-sex marriage. I'm not sure I see it as that strong of a reaction against Obama, because I think Republicans, they may not have gotten on board, but I think they wanted to have some sort of resolution. But if McConnell says, my job is to defeat Barack Obama, my number one job, that means the level of animus may be more than we can even estimate.
Yeah, and quite honestly, I mean, let's face it, the standard Republican Party, the establishment, if you will, was 100% against a lot of what President Obama has done. You could still have gone with, say, Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio and still fit that, you know, anti-Obama kind of lane. I think really what a big part of this is just overall anger at not seeing the Republican Party nationally do what the people, the grassroots, the Trumpites, as we've called them here in the show, what they want to see happen. And an overall feeling that the country is changing. And it is. Demographically, it's changing. All kinds of social conservatism is not quite as strong as it used to be. So I think it's a reaction to a lot more than just President Obama. And Trump did something, you know, we were just talking about the autopsy. The autopsy, nowhere in that 100-page document do you see the word anger. Nowhere in it do you see disenfranchised Republican voters. Everything, as Carter said, is more kind of stretching out and doing what the Democrats have done more of. But what brought Trump to the fore and what has made him the will-be Republican nominee is quite simply an overall anger and feeling of being disenfranchised by a lot of people who don't like the fact that they feel the country is changing in a way that they don't support.
Carter, would you agree with that?
I think there's definitely anger at you know, sort of the cultural changes in direction of the country. I think the two basic things that underlie Trump's success or movement or whatever you'd like to call it, there is an economic hardship underway. There are a lot of people, especially in rural areas where Trump's support's been pretty phenomenal, who are just having a hard time. You know, they've been on a treadmill for 8 years. They've got a job, but they're struggling to make ends meet. They've been on that treadmill a long time, and they're angry about their economic situation. I think that's a major factor, and I think that's one of the big things that drove up turnout in all the Republican primaries. People that were angry were voting, and they were voting for Trump. I think the second piece is general anger at Washington. And there are Republicans angry at Republicans in Washington and Democrats in Washington, and there are a lot of independents the same way. So I think the two main political currents below Trump's success are economic problems and anger at Washington.
Okay. We're seeing this maybe play out here in North Carolina as well. This battle kind of between the establishment's writ large and the grassroots activism. This past weekend, the North Carolina Republican Party had its own insurrection, but it was kind of more the establishment strikes back, it seems, by impeaching its party chair, Hassan Hartnett, who was elected by grassroots activists less than a year ago. Carter, is this symptomatic? Is North Carolina kind of playing out the mirror image of what we're seeing nationally here within the Republican Party?
Well, I think we are. We did in the primary here. But I think the state party chairmanship fight is just, there's probably 36 political activists who really care who's state chairman of the Republican Party. But if you ask voters, they don't have a clue who chairman of either party is. So this is sort of one of those insider spats that really has no significance.
What's the role of the party chairman from your perspective as a campaign strategist? Do they have a significant role within the party, or is it just kind of a figurehead position?
Well, to get right down to it, usually the national party and the presidential races send money to the state party, which under the election law can conduct voter turnout activities. And that's the primary role the state party plays in presidential elections. They don't have the money to fund that themselves, but money comes down from Washington to fund it. So they're a vehicle to do voter turnout. But that's it.
Okay. Susan, from your perspective, the role of party chairman nowadays, is it still relevant? Are parties still relevant in the grand scheme of things?
Well, I think people that study political parties have increasingly said state and local parties have made a comeback. They have permanent headquarters. They have a phone. It comes right down to who you can turn out to vote, and that's where they're very persuasive. The candidate himself or herself can initiate with a lot of new technology, get out the vote, but you really need to know where these people are voting. You need to know the data, and you still need to know, not just on any kind of technological platform, you need to know who the leaders are, who are the cue givers, and I think that's where the state and local party comes into play.
Tom, who is now the Republican Party chairman of after this insurrection from this past
weekend?
Well,
it's a former congressman from North Carolina's 8th district. Robin Hayes is his name, and he's a former chair himself. He chaired just a couple years ago. But I have to disagree a bit with what Carter said. Most voters cannot name the chairman of the North Carolina Republican or Democratic Party. I don't doubt that. But there is still a narrative that's coming out of this meeting where a popularly elected chairman has been ousted. And that is, as you said, the establishment strikes back. In a year where you have an election that seems tinged on anger, going against the idea of an establishment, that kind of thing actually can make an impact. And we'll know more as the year goes on. We'll know more as this goes. It's more potentially than just, party infighting. Party infighting can be damaging to the get out the votes campaign. I mean, the best way to point that out, to show that this is not just hyperbole, is go back to 2014 when Senator Kay Hagan was running for reelection. The North Carolina Democratic Party was in a shambles, ruined pretty much by infighting. It hurt their ability to raise money and it hurt their ability to organize. So her campaign did something pretty unusual, and they paired with the Wake County Democrats to run their Get Out the Vote campaign statewide. So parties do play a role, and infighting can be very damaging.
Carter, if this infighting within the party continues, and we'll potentially see it Saturday at the convention in Greensboro, how will folks that maybe run Pat McCrory's campaign, that run Richard Burr's campaign, how will they react, and what will they do with potentially the top of the ticket, a Trump candidacy, and then this internal battle going on within the party? How will they respond to it?
Well, I think that there's two different things. I just don't think the infighting inside the Republican Party influences many votes. And I just don't think the average person cares about it. They've got big problems of their own, economically, and threats like ISIS. So I don't think the Republican Party or the Democrat Party infighting has had much of impact on voters. It's just a sideshow the voters don't really care about. As regards Trump and Clinton and all that, I think what the statewide, all the candidates really are going to look at is how's the candidate doing in the state. The Democrats have had this problem for decades where, you know, they would have candidates for president that were losing the state by 10 or 15 or 20 votes, and they had to figure out how they'd get elected when that happened because it's a threat to them. And usually they would distance themselves. I think that the Republican reaction will be pretty similar. They're going to look at how Trump's doing in the state, and if he's, you know, ahead or if it's a close race, then it's not really a problem. If he's way behind, then they'll have to figure out a way to deal with that. And maybe they step back. Maybe they go off on their own track independently. There's just a dozen ways to deal with it. But it'll all come down to, is it close?
Tom, what do we know from the poll? Do we have any polls so far that have matched up here in North Carolina, the potential contest between Clinton and Trump?
The last one actually is from PPP, the left-leaning policy public policy polling group out of Raleigh. That's, you know, what was that, January, February, March, April, as I count off my months. It was late last month, and it showed basically a tie right now. But that was, you know, the sample size was relatively low. Mm-hmm. More importantly, it's really, really, really early when it comes to polling, and polling can change significantly. So we, you know, I always tend to not to discount polls this early on, because there's a lot. I mean, just think what's happened in this election over the last month. You know, last, mm-hmm. what was it, a month ago, Ted Cruz was winning Wisconsin significantly, and everybody said that was a turning point. Well, mm-hmm. it was a turning point, but it was a high water mark instead of a sudden stop Trump movement mark. So a lot can change. But what is clear is here in North Carolina, we will be the focus, a big focus of the presidential campaign for a very simple reason. If you look at the electoral map, North Carolina is a must win for a Republican nominee for president in order to win the White House. They have to win here. If you look at historical voting trends, and yes, the Trump candidacy shows that all history, you know, a big chunk of political history can be ignored, but the Electoral College gravity seems strong enough to affect even Donald Trump. So they need to win this state. And so I expect to see a lot of political activity, which will then affect down ballot races. Because let's say you're Governor Pat McCrory in a very tough race for reelection. Well, if you don't support the Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, how does that affect you? Does it dissuade some Republicans from voting for you? Or does it just simply mean that some Republicans may vote for Donald Trump and then come back more towards the Republican establishment, as it were, and kind of, you know, support McCrory anyway? I mean, we just don't know yet.
Susan, what do we see in terms of the electoral map? You know, it's still several months out, but...
Well, I just want to mention one thing and kind of distill what Carter said, and that is it comes down to maybe three factors. What are the Republicans going to think about in terms of ideology, electability, and the character of the candidate? And they're really torn three ways. I think if you look at North Carolina, they said about Obama, demography is destiny. North Carolina and Virginia, some of the fastest growing non-white populations. And I think that's where, again, as we've talked about, North Carolina's got to have the direction. I think the unfavorability. Pat McCrory has never had great approval ratings. And some of that was seeing he was hostage to the state Republican Party. So I think it's going to be very pivotal. And I'm not sure, you know, you can call it purple. And I think that's the most apt. You can't call it red or blue.
D emailed in this. Trump's popularity isn't a mystery. Analysts seem to be too close to the forest to see the trees. His supporters are real. They are Republican and Democrat. Trump is their revenge on both parties. Frustrated and disenchanted voters have an opportunity to use him as a tool to get back at politicians as a whole. Carter, how would you respond to to D in terms of the perception of what Trump is and how.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I mentioned two things, people that are having economic hard times and anger at Washington, and he hit one of them on the head.
Yeah, it's a pox on both their houses. And actually, yeah. if you look at take Pennsylvania and Ohio even, Trump had good support, especially for a Republican, from union members because of this feeling of economic stagnation, of being left behind economically. There's a point there. There's also an interesting question about whether or not Bernie Sanders supporters would eventually jump ship and support Trump, basically because of this idea of being against the current campaign finance rules world, wanting to stick it to the guys who write the big checks, in essence. I don't see that as being 100% realistic, but there are some who may. I don't think it would be enough to sway one way or another. But yeah, I think that does tap into an overall feeling of, again, a pox on both their houses.
Okay.
Well, I think, too, Trump is a bigger challenge to conservatism than Bernie Sanders is to the Democratic Party. And I don't think he's going to absorb all of the Clinton supporters into any kind of movement. But I think when Donald Trump calls his candidacy a movement, that's a little bit more confusing. I think that we look at the independents, and then independents are not reliable voters for either side. But I think, as Carter said, you might have Democrats that are swayed by some of the Trump rhetoric or the simple answers. And in tough times, people want perhaps a simple answer to a complicated question.
Okay. Brent had emailed in, can you talk about the split between the business wing of the GOP and the medium income voters who care about values and wage growth? Carter, how do you see the Republican Party here in North Carolina, if it's a Trump, if it certainly is going to be McCrory, Richard Burr, how are they going to try and thread this needle between two very different wings of the party on economic issues?
that's pretty complicated. You know, that issue's mainly playing out nationally. And, you know, the conflict in trade deals is a good example. The Chamber of Commerce side of the Republican Party believes in trade deals. And then you've got the voters, the fellow that asked the questions, talking about. And they believe they've been hurt by trade deals. And that's a real conflict within the Republican Party. And it's a real conflict in this election. And so I don't know how that plays out in the long term. But it's there, and it's going to get debated, and it's going to get fought out. And my feeling is the votes are probably on the side of the people that question these trade deals and question whether their group of people in the country who've been left behind in the economy.
Okay. We'll pick up after the break talking about the state of the Republican Party nationally and here in North Carolina on Charlotte Talks. That was Carter Wren, a Republican strategist. We'll be right back after this break.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm Horak Tally, helping individuals and businesses find sharp solutions to their legal needs for more than 80 years. Details at HorakTally.com. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the results of Tuesday's Indiana primaries. Senator Ted Cruz drops out of the presidential race and Senator Bernie Sanders wins Indiana. A panel of guests on the Diane Rehm Show will talk about what Tuesday's primary results mean for the 2016 presidential race. That's in 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show next here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation today on Charlotte Talks, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Or you can search for WFAE on Facebook or join us on Twitter at Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
This week on All Things Considered, eating more but cooking less?
Interest in food is higher than it's ever been, but culinary skills are ironically lower than they've ever been.
How our fast food culture is changing the way we eat. Plus, a look at what's ahead in the presidential race following the Indiana primaries. Listen to All Things Considered every afternoon.
I'm Mark Rumsey. Hear the latest news from NPR, plus WFAE news updates from the Charlotte region, weekdays from 4 to 6:30 p.m. on WFAE.
This is Charlotte Talks on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE, Charlotte's NPR news source. I'm Michael Bitzer, sitting in for Mike Collins, and we're talking about the state of the Republican Party in both the nation and here in North Carolina with Carter Wren, Republican strategist, Tom Bullock of WFAE News, and Dr. Susan Roberts, a political scientist at Davidson College. We had been talking about kind of the impact of Donald Trump within the party. Susan, how do you see it playing off in terms of the down ballot? We've got a competitive presidential election, by all predictions, here in North Carolina. We're going to have a competitive gubernatorial race between Roy Cooper and Pat McCrory, potentially one between Richard Burr and Deborah Ross. How are those folks going to have to play towards this division within the Republican Party, potentially?
Well, I think now that Trump is the presumptive nominee, there was an ad that ran in Arkansas, a YouTube ad by Connor Eldridge, and it's really taking on Boozman and saying he's so aligned with Trump. And it was a very lukewarm, I will support the party's nominee. And it was a very ugly, not ugly, but it was a very negative ad, not funded by a super PAC, and a candidate ad. That, if that's a harbinger of things to come, then I think we're going to see ugly down ballot. But the Republicans are going to say, where are we going to put our money in terms of super PAC money? How are we going to craft a message that is more local than national? And how much are we going to play on the voter anger against Hillary Clinton? Because that's one that you could get that association, because the down ballot depends a lot on the top of the ticket. And I think that's the conundrum the Republicans find themselves in.
Carter, what do you think?
Well, there are dozen scenarios right now how the presidential election could play out. Some of them favorable to Trump, some unfavorable. You don't know how that's going to go.
What's the worst, from a strategist's point of view, what could be the worst case scenario that could potentially, you know, flip the state back to Democrats winning at the presidential level and down the ballot, from your perspective?
Well, it's pretty simple in terms of numbers. If the independent voters break against Trump and for Hillary, 2-1, then Republicans are looking at an election where they lose North Carolina by 10 or 12 points. That becomes a big problem down ballot. There are also scenarios where Trump can win the state by 10 or 12 points. You don't know which is going to play out because you don't know how the presidential campaign debate is going to develop and where it's going to go. The anger at Washington is a big plus with Trump, with independents. He's the only candidate in the race that's not a Washington politician. That's been a big part of what's driven him right today through the Republican primary. So on one side of the equation, you've got a force at work that, if it becomes dominant in the debates, it dominates this election, it works for Trump in a big way. If something else becomes the dominant issue, it could work for Hillary. You just don't know how that's going to play out because you don't know what the candidates are going to do. You don't know what the issues are going to be, and you don't know what's going to happen externally.
Okay. Susan?
Well, just to jump in, I think down ballot, and it's roughly twice as many Senate seats that Republicans have to defend in 2016. There's a 10-seat margin, and I think we've already identified some political analyst about 8 races that are very contested, not maybe toss-ups, if not lean Democratic. And so I think the Senate is one that could very easily translate into a Democratic control. I'm not so sure about the predictions that the House could turn. But I think the Senate, it's a very real proposition. And just throwing there on the table, too, how much do people say, let's look forward not to the next presidential election, but to the Supreme Court appointment?
Okay. Well, and Tom. Richard Burr is one of those senators who
has
actually seen his, you know, safe-ish seat, leaning Republican seat, get flipped to a toss-up. And you're already seeing from the Democrats an attempt to tie Richard Burr and Pat McCrory to Trump, or, you know, those kinds of the ideas behind the Trump candidacy. Mm-hmm. There's exactly one Republican who has endorsed Trump in North Carolina in terms of an elected official. That's Renee Elmers, who's a congresswoman. I'm curious to see what happens from this point on, because for the Democrats, it seems easy to kind of tie what is seen as the hateful speech from Donald Trump to things like House Bill 2. And I'm sure the Democratic strategists are dying to start running ads that are trying to tie McCrory and Burr and other top Republicans up for election to that verbiage in order to get what we've been talking about this whole show, which is people seem to be voting not for a president but against a presidential candidate to try to get them motivated to vote against, say, a governor or a sitting senator.
Okay. Joining us by phone now is a prominent Republican, Dallas Woodhouse, the executive director of the North Carolina Republican Party. Dallas, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. Glad you could join us. Last night, you sent out a tweet to Donald Trump saying, "Congrats and please come to the NC GOP convention this weekend in Greensboro." Have you heard anything back from Donald, and is he going to be attending?
Well, we don't know yet. We would sure love to have him. You know, our new chairman, Robin Hayes, from down your neck of the woods, and I were talking about this, how Mr. Trump sort of began a lot of this political stuff at our last convention in Greensboro when Mitt Romney was nominated. He came and he spoke, did a fabulous job. And we'll be holding a press conference at 1:30 today at the General Assembly talking about the Republicans' unity efforts going into the convention, how we are excited and we are energized. And we are absolutely going to be making a public lobby effort for Mr. Trump. We'd love to have him. Now, look, it's a big country. There are 50 states. There's always competition for people's time. And, you know, we may get one of his top surrogates. But we are just, we're excited. You know, Mr. Trump wants to make America great again, and there's no doubt in my mind he can do it. But Pat McCrory and the legislature have already started to make North Carolina great again with tax reform, fixing the unemployment insurance system, getting people back to work. And so we think that Mr. Trump's message is just going to fit hand in glove into the message that we're going to have about our governor, our lieutenant governor, and our state legislature. So we just couldn't be more happy today.
So you don't see any down ballot.
There's a lot of Cruz supporters out there that are disappointed today. They put a lot of sweat and blood and treasure and effort in a great man. I mean, Ted Cruz is a great man and has a great future in our party. There's a place for him for years to come. And we want all those Cruz supporters to know that we at the party support them. And are looking forward to working with them.
Okay. This past weekend, the Republican Party decided to impeach and remove Hassan Harnett as party chair, installed Robin Hayes as the new party chair.
I would use the word elected, not installed.
Okay. Elected. One Harnett supporter, Lisa Baldwin from Henderson County, said, quote, "The grassroots conservatives were very disappointed in this outcome." And one of the contenders who lost to Robin Hayes for the party chair said, "You will lose the grassroots of North Carolina and you will lose the Tea Party in North Carolina if this election went through." Do you fear or do you have any concerns from the party level about the role of grassroots activists in the general campaign?
Not at all. You know, grassroots is not something you say. It is something you do. And grassroots are the people that are going to get out here and help us keep the state red for Mr. Trump and get Pat McCrory reelected and reelect Richard Burr. You know, the party came together. It had an issue it had to deal with. It dealt with it appropriately. And we're moving on. We're moving on to making America great again and making North Carolina even greater.
So in terms of a strategy, you don't see any down ballot impact. You don't see any concerns in terms of coordinating campaigns, the Pat McCrory campaign, the state party's campaign, the Richard Burr campaign, can work for unity with the Trump campaign?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We will all work together. We're already talking with folks about how to do that. We start that effort with our press conference today, getting fully behind Mr. Trump and offering him the full resources of the North Carolina Republican Party to help that. And Governor's pledged to support the nominee. I know he will do that with everything he gets. And, you know, as we know from Pat McCrory down in your area, he's a nice guy and people love him, but he's a fighter, too. He's a fighter, and he's going to help us fight in this election. And I'll say that the first few days with our new chairman have just gone excellent. He has immediately gotten back to work. He's in the state office today in Raleigh, and he has been reaching out to all kinds of people throughout different factions of the party, already bringing them together, and we couldn't be more happy with the success so far.
So one of the events you've got planned for later this afternoon is Chairman Hayes holding an open house and a listening session for grassroots activists. What do you think the chairman and you will hear from grassroots activists later today?
Well, you never know. Grassroots activists are a collection of wonderful individuals, and they'll have all kinds of things to say and advice. And you know, we'll listen, and we will, you know, all start talking about moving forward.
So you don't think that the rift...
And we've had all kinds of people contacting our office, donating money this week, and people saying, you know, I might have had a different view on this, but we're now united behind our new chair. We're all moving together, and now we're all united behind Donald Trump. In his efforts to make America great again, and Pat McCrory's efforts to make it even great.
Do you see this unity coming to play Saturday at the state convention?
Absolutely. We are going to be very unified at the state convention. We're going to have a big crowd, and it is it's one reason we are making sort of this public lobbying effort to get Mr. Trump here. Now, again, we realize it's a big country, and he may not be able to do it, but we would love to be one of the first in a big event to welcome Mr. Trump as the nominee of our party.
All right. That was Dallas Woodhouse, Executive Director of the North Carolina Republican Party. Dallas, thank you so much for your time this morning.
All right. Thank you.
Susan, what your reaction to hearing the Executive Director of the North Carolina Republican Party?
I think it'll be a lot easier, as he points out, to get on board with Make America Great Again. I think both the Democratic both the Republican parties in many of the states, you look at South Carolina, are going to have to try to reconcile not the issues, but the rhetoric of Donald Trump and the damage that that might do. And I think I applaud Mr. Woodhouse's enthusiasm. I'm just not sure that's going to be as easy in all of the states.
Okay. Tom?
I mean, it's easy to say everybody's going to be unified. We're all a happy party. And understandably, that's certainly the goal of any party. But realistically, I think one has to ask oneself, if everybody is so unified, if everybody is so behind Mr. Trump and the removal of Hassan Harnett, who was elected, as you said, less than a year ago, then why is it that the Republican Party has to hold a listening session today for grassroots members? Why is it that you actually see them sending out press releases saying the grassroots are really in charge? I think they are afraid that there's a bit more of a backlash. Now, how big of a backlash? We won't know. I know I'm going to the convention just to see exactly what's going on, but it's not as clear and unified as I think Dallas Woodhouse would like to make it out to be.
Carter, do you see what do you see on Saturday in terms of the grassroots activist and those folks who will be showing up?
I just don't think it makes a whole lot of difference. You know, the parties love infighting at conventions and meetings. It's just, you know, part of that world. And I don't think it influences a lot of votes. And I think the equation we're leaving out of a lot of this is Hillary. And, you know, we're focused a lot on Trump, Trump's problems, and Trump's flaws, and Trump's rhetoric. But Hillary's got plenty of problems, too. And if you're going to look at how this plays out in the election this fall, you got to factor in that. And you know, it's pretty simple. The election, literally in North Carolina, could go either way in the next 5 months. If Trump wins, then it's going to help all the Republicans. And if Hillary wins, it's going to help the Democrats. But you can't just look at this in a prism and say, well, gosh, Trump has this problem and that problem and the other problem. People got a lot of problems with Hillary, too.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. I mean, if you look at her unfavorability ratings, they are also high. I mean, one of the greatest rallying cries for Republicans has been, don't let Hillary win. And that has not changed, regardless of who the Republican nominee is.
Susan, do you see this as basically the campaign strategy? Democrats are going to go after the unpopularity of Trump. Republicans are going to go after the unpopularity of Hillary Clinton. Is this what we're going to be looking at for the next, you know, several months?
Well, I think so. And I think it's somewhat not just the unpopularity, but the persona. I think if you look at some of the questions about the unified party, for example, Trump coming to the convention this weekend, Trump doesn't have as many surrogates to go around as Hillary Clinton does. And I think that might pose a problem for the unified parties in every state.
Carter, we're nearing the end here. Do you see the Republican Party being unified going into the general campaign?
Against Hillary, yes.
Okay. All right. That was Carter Wren, a Republican strategist from Raleigh who's worked on several campaigns. Also joining us, Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College and Tom Bullock from WFAA News on the state of the Republican Party. This is Michael Bitzer, and it's been Charlotte Talks.